the College Football Fix Podcast. With Paul Meyerberg and Dan Wolkin. This is the College Football Fix Podcast from USA Today Sports.
Welcome back to the College Football Fix Podcast from USA Today Sports. I'm Dan Wolkin with Paul Meyerberg. We're recapping week one here and looking ahead to week two. It was a heck of a college football weekend. Some pretty good games, but the one we got to start with, Coach Prime. They did it. They went down to TCU in the season opener, Colorado, Coach Prime. Everybody talking about they're going to go 2-10, 3-9. They're going to get smashed by the Horned Frogs, who made the playoff last year. And absolutely that did not happen. It was a unbelievable performance by Colorado. They go down there and get the win. It is hard to draw up a better start to the Coach Prime era.
Yeah, pretty much an A-plus start for him. I don't know how much of that is the element of surprise. You get nothing on tape. You don't know. The TCU didn't know what to expect, or TCU just was a little bit too cocky. I don't want to say that they're still not going to go 3-9. I mean, they still could go 3-9. It doesn't look that way, obviously, but I don't like want to anoint them as an automatic bowl team. But yeah, I mean, A-plus start. His son was awesome. Travis Hunter was awesome. They were fun to watch. So, I mean, everything that you could have wanted, except for maybe 25 fewer commercials, is the only thing I could have wanted out of that game. Everything else was fantastic.
How many snaps did Travis Hunter end up playing? Like, over 100 offense and defense total? Insane effort. I mean, and obviously, we are now getting a look at him at the Power 5 level. Not that there was any doubt that he was that kind of athlete, that kind of player. When you're the number one recruit in the country or in that ballpark, you're good. If you're a wide receiver, you're ranked that highly, the likelihood of you being a bust are very low. He produced at the FCS level at Jackson State. I don't think there was – was there really any doubt that he was going to come to Colorado and be good? I don't think so. But in terms of this level of impact on the game, both sides of the ball, just the sheer endurance to go out there in the heat and to play that many snaps – and to actually have the kind of impact on the game he had, you know, I don't think it's very productive to start talking about the Heisman, although Deion Sanders leaned into it like 5 minutes into the game, right? Mm-hmm. But, yeah, like if he's going to produce like this every single week, then he's definitely one of the best players in the country.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. I mean, he had 100 receiving yards. He had an interception, first guy in at least 20 or more years to do that in the same game. So there's some talent there. It's a little too soon to say he's going to win the Heisman. I don't even know if they're going to beat Nebraska on Saturday. So I think we should slow down things just a little bit. One thing I will say about that game, and I don't say this as like we must protect our profession against all the slings and arrows that we get from coaches and presidents. But I don't think Deion did himself a lot of favors by, like, calling – I don't think he called anyone individually out, but just to call people out for, like, kind of dismissing his team back in August or in July, I think he set himself up to be, look kind of silly if they do lose to Nebraska this weekend, which is a possibility. So after the game, he was – I know what you wrote. I'm not taking your question. I think that's a little bit silly. But again, like, I think there's something calculated about him. I don't think that he's just flying off the handle. I think this is all kind of planned out, how he wants to present himself to his team, what he wants his team to see out of him. So he's clearly pushing all the right buttons. So everything that you could have wanted, you got and more from Saturday.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think there's something calculated about Deion Sanders. I think everything is calculated about Deion Sanders. Everything is part of the show. Everything is part of the narrative that he's trying to sell. Whether that's football recruiting wise or whatever they're doing documentary wise, like there's always something. Like this is
Affleck.
It's real in that it's happening, but we're all sort of in on the joke, right? That's the kind of the way I look at it. But I do think it's annoying in the sense that, all right, they win the game and then you got all these people cued by what he said saying, yeah, you guys are just bitter, suck it. You know, look at what you wrote. What I wrote? I mean, first of all, how many people in the media, the national media, wrote that Deion Sanders was going to fail at Colorado or that it wasn't going to work? Like, I don't think anybody really wrote that, right? Not that I know of.
Like the hardest thing that you would have seen, the harshest thing you would have seen written is, this is an incredible experiment. Let's see how it goes. Because that's the truth, you know, so.
Well, and yeah, like there were some people who thought their team this year wasn't going to be very good. And we don't know, like, I'm not going to say one way or the other based off one game, but, you know, even the transfer portal stuff, like, yeah, he ran off all those kids. I wrote a column when he did it. It was like, yeah, this is like the real way this stuff works now. And it is going to be interesting to see if other coaches go to the extremes that he did. But I also saw people saying and writing, oh, well, the way he approached it, you know, it revolutionized college football. I mean, did it really? He went to a bad team and he ran off a bunch of bad players to try to get a bunch of better players using a system that people have been using for a couple years in the transfer portal. Like, I don't, like, maybe it was more extreme with Colorado because they were so bad and they had so many guys who just clearly weren't going to fit with what they're trying to do. But, like, again, I don't think there was anything really revolutionary about it.
What it did was just like, it like opened the door to a thing that coaches, because even this generation of coaches had grown up with older coaches and like had kind of believed that it was wrong to do, even though they really wanted to do it. And some guys still did do it under the, even like Urban and Saban to a degree, were churning over rosters pretty quickly. But Deion just took it to the next level. He's really like the first postmodern football coach. Everything is extreme. Everything is calculated. Everything is recorded. It's really interesting. He's just taken everything, like you said, to the next level. But nothing that he's done is different than what anyone else has done before. It's just more of everything.
Yeah. And again, I'm not trying to be a hater here. Awesome win, awesome performance. I mean, it's obviously going to be a wild ride with him at Colorado. But there was so much, like, prisoner of the moment hyperbole going on Saturday. I saw, you know, some people who are really colleagues of ours who are really good. You know, this is the most you know, amazing or dramatic debut in the history of college football or something like that. I mean, look, it would not shock me if in 10 weeks we are looking backwards at that game and like, yeah, a couple 6-6 teams.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. They are the Kenny Trail team of the week. You know what I mean? Like, this is the team of the week.
We've been through this before, right?
Yeah.
Where in week one, somebody does something that seems crazy. It's spectacular. It's an outlier. It's, you know, and we think that's what we're going to get all the time. And that's just not how life works. That's not how the sport works.
No, and like I've said a few times, they could lose on Saturday to Nebraska. Like, they could lose on Saturday to that team.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden we're like, oh, get me rewrite. I need to change a few things that I wrote 7 days ago. So I just want us to take a step back and realize, like, the fact that I still can't say, and I don't think anyone can really say that, oh my God, this is an 8 or 9 win team. You just can't say that. That doesn't detract from how incredible Saturday was for them, for Deion, and for Fox. All those things. Those were 3 of the big winners.
All right, let's move on to the second most important or impactful, maybe in terms of the national race, the most important of the weekend. And that was Florida State 45, LSU 24. Just an absolute undressing of LSU. I called it. I will pat myself on the back. I had Florida State in this game. I thought they were going to win. They were spectacular offensively. And as good as they were, I felt like there was actually more they could do. Like, I feel like the ceiling is not there yet. They still had some, you know, some points left on the board. Like, they were awesome offensively in this game. And that was my theory of the case all along, which is Mike Norvell, one of the best 3 or 4 offensive minds in college football, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Give him a quarterback like Jordan Travis, who's got a lot of experience and who's good. I mean, he's not perfect. but he's a good player. And then I think the big revelation from a, you know, from a national perspective was Keon Coleman, 9 receptions, 122 yards, 3 touchdowns, transfer in from Michigan State. Frankly, didn't watch a lot of him last year because Michigan State wasn't very good and didn't have a quarterback. And, you know, yeah, okay, the scouts can say, oh, yeah, we knew how good he was. But when you see him in this offense with that kind of quarterback, unbelievable. And I think there's two sides to this game. One is, and you pair that with the Clemson result, which we're going to talk about, Florida State is the clear favorite, like, to win the ACC, get to the playoff, not even close. Like, they are
100%.
They are leader in the clubhouse right now for getting into the playoff.
Mm-hmm.
And they got a great schedule for by which to do it. And then the other part is LSU. I mean, that is a very disappointing result. And I'm not, like, overreact to week one guy, but that is a bad result for Brian Kelly, given everything they've invested into him, into this program, and the preseason expectations. Shockingly bad.
Yeah, so let's start with LSU. This is clearly not going to – the season's not going to play out the way that they wanted, and they're not going to achieve what they wanted to achieve. Could they repeat atop the SEC West? It's still possible. They could still get back to an SEC championship game, get to a New Year's Six Bowl. I think a lot of people expected more, rightly or wrongly. But, yes, I just looked at this LSU team, and I didn't see any improvement. I didn't see a whole lot of things that made me think, wow, they've really took a big step forward. This is a different team than last year. They were good last year. They'll probably be good again this year. But last year, Florida State got lucky to beat them. This year, Florida State ran them off the field. And to me, that really stood out. The two teams, the growth in the last 12 months has been profound for Florida State. LSU looks like, at least through one game, there's a little bit of treading water. That's disappointing. Obviously, Brian Kelly can't seem to get out of his own way to a degree. I mean, saying that they're going to beat the heck out of Florida State a couple days before the game is just an unforced error of a ridiculously stupid magnitude. But yeah, the big story, the positive story is Florida State, Dan. And no doubt, we'll talk about Clemson in a second. They're not just the best team in the ACC. Clearly right now, they're a team that you say is good enough to win the national championship. I mean, they proved it on Sunday night. So I'm all about FSU. I think this team could get a whole lot better. Both teams will get a lot better, but I think Florida State, just specifically, new faces on offense, an offensive line that still needs to get a little bit better. I think they will improve week to week. And it's funny, we said last week, Florida State playing Clemson in September, gosh, that's not great for Florida State. I'm worried about that. No, I don't think so anymore. I'd rather play Clemson right now.
You're right.
I want to play Clemson tomorrow and not play him in November. So everything's working out for Florida State from the schedule, coaching, offense. They're set. They're going to lock. They're locked and loaded. They're ready to roll.
Back to LSU for just a second. You hear all the hype. You hear all the preseason talk about what they're going to be, what they could be, how much talent they've got. You know, and then you watch the game and, like, yeah, is Jaden Daniels really – is he really that guy? Like, not really. You know, like, he's good, but maybe not quite what we thought or what we hoped in terms of the growth. Like, I thought their defensive line was disappointing. I know they were arguably missing their best player.
Mm-hmm.
But just didn't think they really matched up as well as they should have at the line of scrimmage. You know, I thought I'm losing my train of thought here, but Harold Perkins, yeah. Like, you know, what was going on
there?
Where was he?
Invisible. And look, they got these new guys in the secondary who are just getting picked on over and over and over again. And I understand Florida State, the hype about this receiver core, even though it was unproven, was that it could be a top 10 unit in the country. Clearly that seems to be the case, but LSU is going to run up against some elite wide receivers, obviously, in the SEC week to week to week to week to week. So I think you come out of that game, you're not just 1-0. I think you look in the mirror and you wonder, what are we capable of achieving this season?
Yeah.
And can we get as far as we wanted to get? I don't think the answer is yes right now.
And I think if there's one thing about Florida State that maybe gives me some pause about overhyping them. You know, I didn't think they really showed a ton of ability to just sort of pound the rock, you know, to just sort of run the ball between the tackles. And at some point, you got to be in that kind of game, right? Now, I don't think it's – first of all, it's not necessarily the key base of Norvell's offense. Like, their running game is going to come in some different forms. with short passes and stuff like that, and obviously the quarterback running the ball. But yeah, that was the one thing that maybe, you know, you could look at and not criticize, but just project down the road and say, is that going to be something that holds them back? But against this schedule, probably not.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a question for like December, January. And like you said, it's not really who they are. Will that come up and bite them at a point where they run up against, let's just say it, they run up against Georgia or they run up against Michigan? Could that be an issue? Yeah, it definitely could be. But yeah, I don't think it's going to stymie them during the regular season because they are inventive. Norvell is really inventive with how he gets the ball to the outside, whether via the pass or the run. So nitpicking is what we're doing right now with Florida State. That's how good they looked on Sunday.
Well, since we mentioned Clemson, let's just go right there. Monday night, Labor Day primetime game. They go to Duke. Honestly, the people who were warning us that Duke could win this game, I kind of ignored them and shoved them to the side. And yeah, I just didn't see it. Honestly, not that I had no respect for Duke, because I do. I have a lot of respect for Mike Elko. Great coach. And obviously coached a great game Monday night. Which I want to talk about in a second, but they were great. Like, yeah, Clemson had some turnovers in the red zone. Like, they should have scored more than 7 points. But you watch the game in totality, and it feels like we are in exactly the same place with Clemson as we were a year ago. They are not dynamic offensively. And, you know, Cade Klubnik, yeah, he had the one, was it the ACC championship game, where he came in and looked awesome, and it's like, all right, that's the torch passing, and he's going to be the next guy.
Right.
He wasn't that guy against Duke. And Clemson as Clemson from 2015 to 2019-ish, 14 to 19, it's over. Yeah. That's over.
Done.
And they need to pivot to something else. Now, don't misinterpret that as me saying they got to fire Dabo Swinney and blah, 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 blah. Now, I want to talk about Dabo. But what has been working for them, what made them the great program they were for that stretch of you know, 6 years, it's over. That's done. And they are struggling to find their next identity in the next way they're going to win at the highest level.
Yeah. At the very least, the aura of invincibility is so destroyed, popped, disintegrated. It's gone. Like, you just lost by 21 points to Duke. No disrespect to Duke, but it's Duke, and you're Clemson, and you scored 7 points and basically got pushed around. I mean, it wasn't like Duke, like, put him in a burlap sack and threw him in the river, but Duke was the better team. And, like, you did not leave that game after the turnovers, after the mistakes, after all that nonsense. No one left that game or stopped watching that game and thought, man, Clemson really should have won. Clemson got robbed. They didn't. They got beat. They got beat by Duke and beat like a drum, essentially. So I don't know what to think about this specific team. I do want to hear your thoughts on the bigger picture about Dabo. I do think about this team that they are going to get better and better and better. But it's like this LSU problem. Like, you've dug yourself such a hole that if you look at the rest of the schedule, like, this is a 9-3 season if you play it out right. And all of a sudden, like you said, the expectations, the standards, the baseline has changed for Clemson. 2019 and those years feel like a long, long, long time away. And I don't know what the fix is, but it ain't this. You know what I mean?
Well, when you look at the recipe that got Clemson to where they were, there were a few elements that were crucial. One, elite quarterback play that you were getting from Deshaun Watson, Trevor Lawrence.
Right.
It was incredible depth at receiver, and they were churning out receivers right and left. Obviously, Travis Etienne was a huge part of those teams, but even before Etienne, like, again, like, I'm not going to necessarily hold Clemson to the standard of, oh, you should be as good as you were in 2016, 2018. But how about 2014? Mm-hmm. Right? How about 2013? When, like, you were maybe not good enough to win a national championship, but you were really good. You were top seven, top six, beating Ohio State in an Orange Bowl. Good. That they're not even close to that. Where are the receivers? Where's the speed? Where's the skill? Like, they're just, it looks very hard for them to do anything offensively. Very hard. It's laborious to watch them. It's like, I think I compared it to, you know, trying to get them to 20 points feels like running a marathon. It's, and that's not sustainable. And then on the defensive side, yeah, they're good. Like, they got good players and, you know, maybe not as fearsome on the defensive line as, you know, Dexter Lawrence, Christian Wilkins, whatever. They're good defensively, pretty good. But the skill and the speed is just gone. And that's what they were built on. So I don't think this – yeah, they're going to win 9-10 games. And Dabo's going to, oh, you know, bellyache about people complaining and being ungrateful. But, well, I'm sorry. Like, if you think that's acceptable, if you think that's good enough for what they did and for what they're paying you and all the resources they've given you, this is all on him. There's nothing Clemson has not done or said no to in terms of building the program, investment, facilities, personnel. And then you had all the momentum from those championship years, and this is what you've done with it. Again, I'm not saying fire Dabo, but they've got to do some real soul searching, and he's got to do some real soul searching about his approach. And that's not going to be easy for him because he is a very stubborn man.
Very stubborn. I don't know what the fix is. I just know this. It's one thing to say, look, we need to celebrate winning the ACC, like you said last season. Like, I buy that. You go 11-3, you go 11-2 after winning the ACC. Like, I'm all on board with, you can't win a championship every single year. You did win the ACC. You got to a major bowl. Let's celebrate. I was totally good with that. That equation changes, and that statement changes when you finish second to Florida State in the conference standings. That it's a totally different animal when you're no longer even winning the ACC. And I think that's the position that they're going to be in this season. Let's not forget, they're already 0-1 in conference play. All right? They could have two ACC losses by the end of the month. And I think if that's the case and Florida State is basically a game and a half up and they're rolling, no, 2.5 games up and they're rolling and Clemson's battling for 5-4 or 5-3, that's a totally different animal. I'm really interested in how he phrases or spins that, spin being a negative word, but how he sells that. Because if they finish second or third or fourth in the ACC, it's not just enough to say, hey, we're going to maybe make a change at coordinator. There needs to be more soul searching than that. And like you said, Dabo is averse. Well, he's a spiritual guy. I shouldn't say he's averse to it. But in terms of looking in the mirror and making big time changes to his program, he always comes off as a very, very averse to that.
Other results that I think we need to talk about. Thursday night, Utah goes just absolutely. They just ransacked Florida. Like, I thought Florida might, you know, I was buying into the hype, the improvement of what we were hearing out of Gainesville. And, you know, it was 24-11, but it really wasn't even that close. Like, Utah just mauled them. And Florida looked really bad. It's never a good thing when people are, like, Googling the buyout number. And it's like $39 million or something crazy like that for Billy Napier. Yeah. But he is edging toward the hot seat because that was horrible. That was really horrible.
Yeah, that felt like an NFL game. You know what I mean? When you watch a – not that I watch a lot of NFL, but you watch some NFL games and it's like the good team, name good team NFL, name bad team NFL, and it just never feels close. It was like that. So, yeah, not good for Florida. But he's not going anywhere. They're going to give him next season. I don't want to go there. But I do think that he's got to show some progress this year just to, A, hang on to this recruiting class, and, B, bring some hype back because the hype is going away.
Washington 56-19 over Boise State. Very impressive for them to take a game that historically has been a difficult one for the Washingtons of the world, and they blew it out. Ohio State 23-3 over Indiana. They didn't look bad, and obviously holding Indiana to 3 points is nice for the defense, but offensively it looked a little clunky.
Yeah, you know, as expected.
Yeah, just not. You know, again, they're going to get better, I think, but you want to see a little razzle dazzle, and there that was not a razzle dazzle type of game for them.
No.
North Carolina over South Carolina, 31-17. Shane Beamer was like complaining about something with the chain gang. Did you see this?
No, I did not see that.
He said they were like having a ham sandwich or something. I don't know. Okay.
His offensive line was having a ham sandwich that game. Let's be real.
The chain crew. I'm trying to remember what he was all upset about, but basically he said the chain crew was eating a hot dog prior to the second half starting. Clock was wrong the whole damn game. We were trying to kick an onside kick to start the second half. We have to wait on the chain crew because they're eating a hot dog. I don't know. It's just a little too much belly aching, honestly, from him.
Guys got to eat. That's hard work, that chain gang. You're moving up and down that line the whole time.
They weren't good enough. Spencer Rattler, 30 of 39, but, 9 yards per completion. I don't know. It's just what they didn't run the ball at all. Like 31 rushes minus 2 yards for South Carolina.
Yeah.
It's gnarly.
Rattler. The whole thing was bad. They didn't.
Yeah, it was bad.
They didn't. Chain gang, unless they could play left tackle, they weren't helping anyone in that game, especially South Carolina.
Alabama 56-7 over Middle Tennessee. Jalen Milroe was the starter. Did some nice things. It's Middle Tennessee, so who knows? But he only had to throw the ball 18 times, and he threw 3 touchdowns. Not a high volume passing type of game for him, but I'm sure that's encouraging. It was a relatively clean performance. Texas over Rice, 37-10. Obviously, Texas-Alabama is going to be the big one next week, but no Arch Manning. What did you make of that?
Yeah, it didn't play. I thought that at some point when they brought Murphy in, that Manning was going to get that last drive. They got the ball back with, I think, about 2 minutes or maybe high 1 minute. Just an opportunity to get him on the field, hand the ball off 3 times and take a knee or whatever. So a little bit surprised. Because, look, like he can play in 4 games. And do whatever he wants. And Texas is not going to have necessarily automatically 4 more games after Rice where they're going to be up by 40 points in the fourth quarter. They might. So, yeah, a little bit surprised by that. I don't want to read into it. I don't think it says anything except for the fact that he's not in the mix to play this year, but I thought he would get some snaps late.
Anything else from last weekend catch your eye that we need to go over here?
No, but let's move forward. We're guessing for week two, obviously Alabama, Texas is game number one. Anything else that we want to talk about moving forward?
Well, I think we need to talk about that game a lot.
What do you got?
Well, so look, I have been a Steve Sarkisian skeptic for many years. It's not that I don't think he's a good coach. I think he is a good coach. And I think his program is clearly doing well in recruiting. They're using NIL, they're doing all the stuff right, and they've got a lot of talent, and I think their talent base is only going to increase. But I do think there comes a point where you need to see Sark do two things. He's got to do two things to me to be the long-term success answer at Texas. He's got to win not all the games you're supposed to win, because nobody really does that, but he's got to win pretty much all the games you're supposed to win. And that's been his problem. That's been a big problem with Sark. He loses a lot of games he's supposed to win. He's Texas, USC, Washington, all of his stops. There's that flat week that happens against somebody that they should beat. And that's a problem in college football, because you only get 12 games. Right. And the margins are small. You can't have those sort of letdowns. So that's to me going to be a huge part of this season for Texas. But I also want to see him out-coach a great team. I want to see him out-coach a good staff. And that's the opportunity they have at Alabama. They've got probably I don't know about better quarterback play, certainly more dynamic quarterback play. They have they should have a lot of confidence, like that they can throw the ball. on this team. You know, they got very close to winning last year. I know it's in Tuscaloosa, but I do feel like Texas kind of needs to win this, or else people just kind of roll their eyes again and say, same old Texas.
Yeah, what you would hate to see for Texas is to lose 34-14, which is obviously possible. But, you know, I think you make a good point about the talent on this roster. Alabama's got a bunch of young guys who are clearly off the charts, who we don't really know a lot about. But I look at these two rosters right now, I think Texas matches up pretty well. I mean, no one outside of Georgia or a couple others has the overall talent of Alabama, but you look at the pieces that Texas has, I like the matchups. So to me, like, if you don't give Alabama every single inch of what they can handle, let alone win the game, then yes, it's a disappointment for Texas. I have no doubt. Maybe you disagree. I have no doubt in my mind that they've circled this game for the last 364 days or whatever it was since they last played Alabama. And they look forward to this game as maybe a leaping off point or a breaking out point. That's fine. I think they have a capability of doing that. But if they come out flat in Tuscaloosa, and aren't prepared for Milroe or whomever, and if they lose by 13, 17 points, that's going to be really, really ugly for Sark, Dan. Do you agree about that?
I do, yeah. Look, I think Texas fans are excited about the overall picture because they're getting really good talent. I think they're recruiting at the kind of level they need to again, and they're obviously moving into the SEC next year, where that's a whole other situation that, you know, could go a lot of different directions. That's not going to be easy for them. It's going to be a transition, and frankly, like, it could be a little shocking, I think, in some ways, the week in and week out wear and tear that brings. But yeah, I just, like, I don't feel there's been a signature Sarkisian, like, what's the moment that you grab onto in his tenure to say, this is it, man, this is it, this is what we're going to be.
That's been his story throughout his entire, every single stop. Like, you're always waiting for that moment. And the moment has never come for him as an individual, for his teams. He's never had that moment. So that's why I feel like that they are looking at this game as the moment. And I worry about that. You know, I worry about getting too amped up or too hyped up for one game and getting your balloon burst. So I think there's a lot of, like, the storylines here are intense. But if you just look at the on-field play, my question for Texas is not how you match up talent-wise, because I really like their matchups. It's how are you prepared, and are you mentally prepared for the challenge of 60 minutes in Tuscaloosa? And I don't know enough about this team. I don't think we know enough about this program under Sark to say for sure that they're going to respond to that adversity. Because as we've said over the years, Sark's teams typically do not respond well to that challenge.
Yeah, they're a little soft. They're a little soft reputationally. You know, and
they have to change that reputation. And Texas, as a program, is viewed as soft. They've been viewed as soft inside the profession for 13 years. And I think that's an old habit that dies hard. They need to go out and prove it. So, yeah, that's one of the underlying themes of this, is Texas prove me game. And if they lose, it's going to feed back into that loop of skepticism and cynicism about the direction of the program, and specifically the direction of the program under Sark.
I'd say the second most important game this weekend is A&M going to Miami. I did not watch the A&M New Mexico game, I will admit, but it was a 52-10 win for A&M, and I just saw a lot of A&M hype. I thought, you know, look, Connor Wegman, we got a glimpse of last year, super efficient, 5 touchdowns and 23 passing attempts against New Mexico. I don't think that really tells us much. Evan Stewart had a great game. They've got talent at receiver. I mean, they've got, you know, depth of running backs. They've got Bobby Petrino calling the plays. I am not one to buy into Texas A&M generally. Mm-hmm. I do think they should win this game.
I do too. I like the way they played on Saturday. I understand New Mexico is not even the best team in the state, which is pretty damning, even though New Mexico State lost to UMass. So I don't know what to make of it from a challenge perspective, but they've got speed. They've got a QB. This offense looked really good. So I watched Miami play Miami too. It's not like Miami didn't look okay.
Yeah.
So I just like A&M, like you. I'm going to take A&M they're going to be on our picks, right? A&M is still ranked. A&M, right?
Yes, A&M's ranked.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm going to take A&M as well this week. It's an interesting game, right? Like,
oh yeah,
I think Miami, if they win this game, it's a big win for Cristobal. And if A&M loses, it's a bad loss for Jimbo. So either way, it's a win-win situation for the viewer.
How about Ole Miss at Tulane? I love this one. I love this game.
How often do these teams play? Do you have any idea, like, the last time these guys played, or if there's any sort of history here beyond when they used to play annually?
I think for Ole Miss, it's one of those things. If you're the athletic director scheduling this game, mm-hmm. you kind of do it as like a almost I think a gift to the fans who travel. To be like, oh yeah, go have a weekend in New Orleans.
Yeah, good point.
The problem is you're playing a Tulane team that is probably at the apex of what Tulane in the modern era is going to be. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden now you've put Lane Kiffin in a situation where they're favored, but they could easily lose this game.
Yeah, seems like a real bad situation potentially for Ole Miss. I don't know if South Alabama is going to be as good as they were last year. That's kind of like the issue with week one. It's we're using a lot of, reputation.
Oh, and by the way, I think it's even more so in with the transfer stuff. Like,
yeah,
I'm sorry. We don't know how good any of these teams are going to be.
It's and we impossible. Still don't. Still don't after 1 week. If South Alabama is like even still like a top four team in the Sun Belt, then Tulane is still really good. Like for a group of five team, they're still really good because they ran away from South Alabama in the second half. So, it just smells like trouble. I think I don't think you as Ole Miss go into Tulane and you're like, well, we're just going to push them around because they're little old Tulane. I don't know if that's the case, but if there is like even an inch of that, then Tulane is going to take advantage. So that's a game that matters almost zero nationally, but I'm going to be very attuned to that because I think that has an upset special on it.
A couple of interesting non-conference games that just matchups you don't really see a lot. Oregon is going to Lubbock to play Texas Tech. Texas Tech got popped last weekend at Wyoming in two overtimes, which I don't think is a horrible loss. It's not a good loss, but it's not a horrible loss. You got to go play at Wyoming. I mean, that's
tough place to play. Everybody in the world who has ever been to Laramie or even knows anything about Laramie knew that that game was going to be a dogfight. Just knew it.
Well,
it's an elevation.
Yeah, 7,000 feet.
I was on the call with Craig Bowl last week, and someone asked, Texas Tech is getting in a day early. Are you worried that they're going to be ready for the elevation? And he goes,
yeah.
No. Modern research says that it takes 6 weeks to get accustomed to our elevation. 6 weeks. And they got there 6 hours earlier, whatever. So, yeah, that was a fun game. Also, those are the games, Dan, like a game that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, especially for the way we cover this sport. Doesn't matter. But the scene on the field, double OT, you got a weather delay. That was very cool. I'm sorry to hijack that thought, that was a really fun game. I enjoyed watching that.
By the way, I once covered a game in Wyoming, and I literally got all four seasons in the same game. Like, it snowed, it thunderstormed, it was, like, sunny and 70.
Laramie is, like, legitimately still set up like an old West town. Like,
yeah.
To turn the corner and hit into a draw.
It stopped in time, yeah.
So, awesome. So, very fun. But anyway, Oregon going to Texas Tech. I don't know if Tech was looking forward to this game, like looking past Wyoming. But I don't think it matters. I think Oregon wins this game going away. Oregon might be pretty good. I know they played Portland State, but you put up 81 points and 1,600 yards of offense. I think that makes me stand at attention.
Utah coming off the win over Florida's got to go to Baylor. We didn't talk about it, but Baylor got beat Saturday at home by Texas State.
Yikes.
G.J. Kinney. He's 34 years old. He was at Incarnate Word. Gets the call up to the FBS. Gets the job at Texas State. Mm-hmm. You remember G.J. Kinney as a player?
Absolutely.
And they went in there and beat Baylor like pretty handily. It's not great for Dave Aranda, who I like and I think is a really good coach. but they were very disappointing last year. I thought they were. I thought they were. I mean, they were picked to win the Big 12, and they were basically they were. And so you come out and lose to Texas State.
This is like the weirdest sentence of the day, but I feel like Utah's a better matchup for them than Texas State, because Utah's like maybe going to be a little bit more traditional, a little bit less sideline to sideline, a little bit. So I don't expect them to give up 45 points to Utah, but I still expect them to lose. It's going to be hard for me to forget that Baylor lost to Texas State. That's going to be an earworm for me for the rest of the season.
Wisconsin going to Washington State out on the Palouse. Just quick realignment update since we last spoke. Not that it's a surprise or new news at this point, but Cal, Stanford, SMU going to the ACC. Washington State and Oregon State have not officially figured out what they're doing, but it seems like a 90-something percent chance they're going to end up in the Mountain West. In some ways, this is almost like if you're a Washington State fan, you got Wisconsin coming in. Like, this is kind of one of those days you got to savor because it may be a while before you get a whole lot more like this, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Wisconsin made their debut under Luke Fickell last week. It was 38-17 over Buffalo. I don't know. I didn't see the game. Couldn't watch them all. Don't know what to read into it. But this will be one to watch just to kind of see what Wisconsin Fickell era looks like against a pretty decent opponent.
Yeah, like a mid-tier Power 5 team, like team number 37 in the Power 5. So, yeah, nice test for them. I will say about Oregon State, Dan, they played on Sunday. San Jose State, who knows? But they looked really good. DJ Uiagalelei looked really good, really comfortable, had five touchdowns. Four or five. I might have lost track. I have a feeling that Oregon State is going to have – you remember the movie Major League, right, where they decide, let's just go out and win the whole damn thing. I think Oregon State's going to have a Major League season. They're just going to go out and win the whole damn Pac-12 because I think they look that good. Washington State is not going to do that, but maybe they're motivated to make some noise. And Wisconsin comes to town, and like you said, they embrace the moment and they score the upset. I would just take Wisconsin because they're Wisconsin, but like also you said, I have no idea if they're good or not. No clue.
And then the last game that I think merits a mention is Iowa State. Everyone knows Iowa is in this season where Brian Ferentz has got to average. What's the number he's got to average? Like 20?
25.
25 points a game. They scored 24 in the opener against Utah State.
It's so good. It's so good. It couldn't be more perfect, actually. It couldn't be more perfect than to win a game against Utah State and score 24 points. So I did the math. 25.1 points per game the rest of the way is what he needs to average. He's very close.
Well,
but 24 is perfect.
Well, and I'll put the caveat here. Like, I just don't know what's going on with either of these teams because of all the gambling stuff, and they've had all these suspensions. Right. Got all these players suspended. So, like, God knows personnel-wise. But, like, if you just had to bet, are they going to get to 25 points against Iowa State? I'd say no.
I would also bet no. I would bet no.
I mean, this game is, like, always 13 to 10.
Yeah, they're going to need overtime just on that. They might get there with a couple two-pointers to get to 26. But, yeah, I think they're going to score 23 points. That's
23.
So, it would be great if they went 10-2 and they averaged 24.8 points per game.
Oh my God! Does it round up? Do you round up?
I don't think there's rounding up here. I think if they have averaged 24.75 points per game, they're going to round it up to 24.8. But they're not giving him 0.2 points. They're just not. So that's my dream. I have a feeling that's what's going to happen. Iowa's going to be really good, but not hit the mark.
All right, I think that's all the games we got to talk about. It's not the heaviest week of big games, but interesting stuff in there. Yeah,
some other things. That's
A&M Miami. It's there's enough in there. All right, well that's going to wrap the show for this week. For our producer Chandler back in the studio, Eric Smith, the college sports editor at USA Today. I'm Dan Wolkin, Paul Meyerberg. We thank you very much for listening to the College Football Fix podcast presented by USA Today Sports, and we'll talk to you soon.
The College Football Fix podcast. With Paul Meyerberg and Dan Wolkin. This is the College Football Fix podcast from USA Today Sports.